50th birthday, and she was taking me to court for my DUI. And, you know, what a way to celebrate that. And it's interesting that, you know, tonight I'm up here. So I'm pretty grateful for the Rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous to have been giving me this opportunity. And with that, the person who is speaking for me tonight, you know, I didn't want to get a sponsor when I first came in at all. And like, I thought I could do it for myself. And so 9 months into coming around, she kept asking me, she's like, do you have a sponsor? Do you have a sponsor? And I was like, no, I'm working on it, you know, like every night. And because I kept going to her for things, but I wouldn't ask her. And so finally I did. And she has helped save my life more than once, and probably more than she'll ever know. And with that, I'll give you Lindsay.
I'm Lindsay Tuggle. I'm an alcoholic. And a while back, I told my sponsor I wasn't really a crier, as I was crying, I think. And she's like, you should probably just give into it. You're a crier. Stop denying that you're a crier. Thank you. So friends are four. I almost started to cry when she was saying that, because it's crazy how AA works, you know? It's completely the other way around for me. And to get to be a part of something like that is never in my wildest dreams before I got to AA did I ever think anybody would say that, you know, have those things to say, but it was not quite that way when I got to AA. And for quite some time after, I can assure you. And my sobriety date's July 9th of 2006, and this is my home group since I've been in Tampa. I have a sponsor and sponsor some girls and stuff like that. I'm actually really, really nervous. This is my home group, and I remember I did a 15-minute speaker here. I was just to tell you that it does not always change when you stop drinking, or I didn't. when I did the 15-minute speaker, it was over at the old church. Some people can remember it. I just moved out of my crazy ex's, well, not my crazy ex, but my ex's house that day, and I remember I came there that night. You know, I had my moving gear on, and this guy Jaime was speaking, and this little Spanish boy with linen pants, and I know we don't have those where I'm from. People don't wear linen, guys don't wear linen, you know, and I was like, who is this boy? Who is this? And they asked me to do the 15-minute, and I'm like, oh, they finally need to know, you know, like, I'm really gonna let them know what's going on, you know. I hadn't worked the steps, you know, obviously I hadn't really done anything but come to meetings, which is not it, clearly, and I was one of those, you know, that they thought, I guess they wanted to ask to make sure people would, like, come up and talk to me, so I would, oof, it was bad. What happened is I drank, and it was ugly from the get-go. I started when I was 14, and a couple things that weren't as apparent to me then as they had been after I got sober was that I always thought that I sucked. I always felt like if I had your parents or your clothes, or, like, I always wanted to be somebody else other than myself. I always wanted to be somewhere else with somebody else doing something else. And that was a summary of my life from the get-go, and a couple of things that were tremendously important to me before I got to drinking was that I played ball, and I wanted to play college ball, and I wanted to play ball is what I wanted to do. And my family was real active in sports and church, and primarily I wanted to play ball, and I wanted to. My religious values were really, really important to me. There were a lot of things I wanted to bring into my adulthood. That I really, really, with all my heart, wanted to bring into my adulthood. And within 6 months of taking my first drink, every single moral, every single value, every single anything that I had desired as a goal was gone. I quit playing basketball, something I had done forever and wanted to continue to do until somebody told me I couldn't anymore. I placed myself in a position to be in a blackout around someone who was not that good of a reputation, and some stuff went down that I didn't volunteer for. And I take my part in that. And basically, so within 6 months of taking my first drink, I'm already, like, really suffering a lot of consequences. And that continued to be the case. And I drank for a while, and I found out when I was like 16 maybe that you could drink in the morning. And I remember it was like a spiritual experience because it just hit me. You know, like I still remember thinking, like, oh, like, you could drink in the morning. Like, you can. Like, what, you know, why wouldn't you? And so I did, and it continued on. And where I'm from in Tennessee, they have this thing called No Child Left Behind, which means you can't fail out of high school. And you don't really even have to go. And which is probably, like, you know, from an educational standpoint, why we're, like, ranked 49 every year or something like that. But so I didn't go, and I passed high school, and that's the only reason that I passed high school. And I had become a daily drinker by not shortly there, maybe like I was a junior or something. And like I loved drinking. I didn't like, it wasn't like a social thing. Like, by myself, drink. Wherever, you know, with whomever. Usually that's how it was. You know, with whoever, whatever. I didn't have a lot of standards. I had to drink. So when you have to do something, you don't really care what comes along with it. And that's kind of how it was. And I never controlled my drinking. And as I started getting older, I started doing things like flunking out of colleges, and that would make my parents real upset. Oh, when I was in high school, I started putting my hands on my mom. And I never, ever thought that I would do that. I mean, I always hated my mom, and I blamed her for everything ever wrong in my life. And I can tell you, after hearing some of y'all's stories with what your parents were like to y'all, I'm like, shocked. Like, I used to tell people when I got to AA, it was my parents' fault, they love me too much, that's why I'm alcoholic. Like, really? Really? Do you really think that? Really? Like, if you think that now, I assure you, if you keep coming back, that will probably change, because I can't even believe I thought that. Like, that's ridiculous. But I used to blame them for everything, primarily my mom, and I made sure she knew all the time, and I used to put my hands on her when I would get drunk. And the other day, she sent me this text message, and as a result of the ninth step, particularly, and a lot of people in this home group, I had to make amends to that woman, obviously. I'd done a number of things, but she sent me this text message the other night. I got in my car, and I saw this text message that said, "Being your mom is the most amazing thing I ever did." And I can assure you that that was not the case a few less years ago than I've been sober. And so, you know, I used to put my hands on my mom, and I would do stuff like that would really hurt her and hurt me, but I couldn't not. Like, we go to this church, right, I grew up in, and on like graduation Sundays, you know, they have a little, if you pop up your senior picture and they give you like a little book or something in front of the church, and good job, where are you going to school, whatever. And I just kind of like no called, no showed. Like, my parents were there, my picture pops up in front of the church, and they're just like, okay, moving on. You know, I mean, most of them knew anyways, but it was just like I was constantly doing stuff to those people that was just like really hurt me, you know, like really hurt me that I could do something like that to those people, but I couldn't put the effort to match the intentions, you know. And so I went on, I don't have a lot of time, but I went on, I flunked out of a few schools, and what happened is, like, I continued to just drink and die, you know. Any other moral that I had like maybe edited along the way was just eventually just wiped away completely, no additions necessary. And I just flunked out of this my first school, and I decided I was going to move to Fort Walton Beach. I moved to Fort Walton Beach, and I'm at the one, and I know most of the girls in this room, and they all have the one too, so I have the one. And I knew he was the one because I met him at this house party, and it was me, this girl that I knew, and like 8 or 10 military dudes, you know, and that's kind of how I like to roll. I like to have my options. And I never hung out with women on purpose. It wasn't like a fluke. Like, I hated women. I hated women in AA. I, you know, still struggle being around large groups of them. And what I've learned, what has been pointed out to me, is that women will tell me the truth about myself as a woman that I most of the time don't want to hear when I'm living like that. You know, they'll tell me to put some clothes on when I have my butt cheek showing at a meeting, that it, you know, I shouldn't have my butt cheek showing at a meeting. And I've been told that in sobriety, you know, and they'll tell me stuff like that, and I'm like, oh, I hate women, you know, because I don't want to hear the truth about myself, you know. And so I never hung out with women, and so we're drinking. We had this, like, trough, called it an ammo bowl. It had, like, a bunch of bottles of Twister and vodka, I think. So that, like, all of us at this party have straws, and we're going around, like, the edge of this trough. And that's kind of how big it is, you know, circled around. And we're chugging. We're sitting, whoever the last one standing is the winner. So we're chugging, this vodka through straws, vodka and Twister combo. And me and this guy are the last two standing. You know, we're going head to head, you know, and I'm like, he's the one. And I didn't disbelieve God, so at this time I clearly think that God has placed him there in my life. And I waited what I thought to be a good amount of time to move in with him, which was 2 weeks. And it seemed long enough. It was about the time I had to go from where I was at the current place. And and this is funny now, but this is very, very serious back then. You know, like, I had to. And I couldn't let him go out of my sight, you know. Anyways, and he was the one, you know. So me and the one are drinking. And like, I'm an alcoholic because I suffer from alcoholism, which basically means that once I start drinking, I cannot stop no matter how great the necessity or wish for me to stop is. And what's at stake if I and knowing what's at stake if I continue to drink or pick up a drink again after I've come to, you know, the fact that I'll know all that and really not want to drink and drink anyway, and that's what makes me alcoholic. But I'm an idiot when I'm drinking too, like, so the combination of the two was and I'm kind of a klutz anyway, sober, so like the combination of it was stuff like, I let this guy burn a wart off my knee with a cigarette, you know, and like, we used to have headbutt contests, me and the guys on the baseball team and that I lived in the dorm with. We used to have headbutting contests. Yeah, like, so I'm an alcoholic, and I'm really dumb when I'm drinking. So it just was always, there was always something going on, you know. And I suffered a lot of spiritual consequences in the actions that I was taking, seeking whatever it was I was seeking. And I thought I had to do a lot of things in order to keep people around me. And that was the truth, because I had nothing really to offer anybody. He got orders to go to Korea, and I had to move back home to Tennessee, and moved in with my aunt. And what happened is, like, since he was in Korea for a year, sometimes we would break up over Skype, or a lot of times we would break up over Skype, and it would be a lot, so sometimes it would get confusing. We didn't know if we were together or not, I don't know. So at one point, I enrolled in school, and, I'm really going to get it together, you know, like, I'm constantly moving, I'm going to get it together this time, you know. Well, in my head, it sounds like this: we're really going to get this together, we got to not crash our car today, we got to take a shower, you know, going real fast, and it's always in we, because we're always talking to each other, and, so we made it to class, and so I go to this class, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, don't drink, you know, and this guy looks at me, and he says, do you drink? And I mean, like, if you're an alcoholic like me, you know, regardless of what's at stake, if you drink, and regardless of how much you want to say no, without Alcoholics Anonymous, if you ask me if I drink, my answer is yes. Without hesitation, there's no fight. I don't have a fight in me against drinking. And so I said yes, and I moved into the baseball dorm pretty much that day, and never left till I went to rehab. And, you know, I just continued to drink and die, and, like, I don't have a lot of time, but, you know, I so many things as a woman, I thought that I was the only woman to ever do the things that I'd done and live the way that I'd lived, and I found out that's not the case. And so my mom this whole time is telling me, you know, I had like 12 car wrecks or something like that. I was always drinking. I love to drink and drive, actually. I would volunteer to be the driver when I was the drunkest, and I was getting in bar fights, and I'm small. I'm not, you know, whatever, but I just had a really loud mouth. Still sometimes have a really loud mouth. And my mom was like, okay, well, if you'll go to rehab and not drink for something like a month or something like ridiculous, she's like, I'll pay for you to go see the one in Korea. So I'm like, all right, we can do this. Because I believe this to be the case for me, is that I believed that if I had a sufficient enough reason to stop drinking, I could. And hello. And I really thought that, like, well, the car wrecks just weren't good enough reason. Like, I just made those not good enough for me. You know, like, all these reasons that a lot of people thought for me that were made me unmanageable at drinking, you know, I thought those just weren't sufficient reasons. So I can clearly stop drinking for him. He's the one. God gave him to me, you know. And I had come home one night, and I was drinking by the creek with this guy that I used to date while his pregnant girlfriend was at the house, at his house, not mine, obviously. And, I think I had come home and put my hands on my mom again that night, and the next morning they're taking me to rehab. And immediately I'm thinking, like, we might have, might have been jumping the gun here, you know. This is just not, we're good, you know. I'm already starting to hesitate. And this is, like, in May. So, like, my birthday's in January. So, I guess, like, 5 or 6 months prior to that, for my 20th birthday, I'd been out. Well, I was always out. But I was up for a while, for a few days, pre-birthday celebration. And I'd become a connoisseur of some things at that time. And I knew when it was going in, it was bad. And I knew when it was going to be coming out, it was going to be real bad. So, I kind of came to on the morning of my 20th birthday, and I thought I was dying. And I'd had alcohol poisoning a lot. I really feel like if you don't get alcohol poisoning, you could have kept drinking, you know? You just go for the gold, you know? And so I had that a lot, and I would get sick, but this was, like, different sick. Like, this was, like, I really felt like it was shutting down, like you're really, like, you're dying right now. And so I call up this guy, and I'm like, can you come get me? I think I'm dying. And he's like, yeah, I'll come get you. And so they were trying to, like, give me, like, drips of water or something. I couldn't even get water in my mouth without getting sick. And I was like, I'm gonna die. And I was like, this is good. We finally achieved it, you know? Because, like, every morning I would come to, and I would be pissed at God, like, why did you let me live? I didn't want to kill myself because I was like, I wreck everything. I'm going to wreck this and end up, like, paralyzed or something. And that's going to suck worse and whatever. I'm like, they took me to this, like, crack dealer's couch. I didn't smoke crack, but when I came to that morning, like, I didn't obviously drink that day, which was, like, I think maybe the only day forever, but, I, like, came to, and I'm laying on this couch, I'm on the only piece of furniture in the house, there's, like, it's stained, you know, with some people's fluids that I don't know who they are and where they came from. You know, there's, like, holes in the walls, there's stains on the floor, people around me are, like, there's just, like, all kinds of stuff going on, and I, like, open my eyes, and I'm, like, oh, man, I really don't belong here, and so fast forward to going to rehab, I was, like, well, we can just go check it out, you know, because, like, my standards for living are so high that I need to check out my rehab. Mind you, I'm, like, detoxing on stranger crack dealers' houses in the hood, you know, but I need to make sure that my rehab is up to standards. And I went there, and basically what happened was my parents paid $15,000 for a big book, you know, and they sent me to you. And then I haven't left. And but what happened is they played Michael Jackson and some stuff like that. And I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety, and Michael Jackson just didn't do it for me. But I got out, and somebody gave me the Living Sober book, and I was like, okay, maybe I'll read this. The big book is way too big. It's too much. I'll read The Living Sober, it's the Cliff's Notes, you know, kind of the same color. All right. And read it, and I was like, jump rope, running, okay, we can do this. I couldn't even do that, actually. I was pretty out of it. But I had developed, like, a stutter, and I started hallucinating and stuff, and it was kind of bad, I guess. But I drank some more. And there's only two more incidences I want to tell you about, really, because I don't remember a whole lot from that time. But I went to this keg party July 4th weekend, because that's, you know, where I was going, not drinking. And I didn't have a sponsor. I went to a couple of meetings. That's it. No sponsor, no home group, no sobriety date, no nothing else. But I had attended a couple of meetings. And the information that, like, God allowed to, like, slip through, because I don't know how I heard this, was if when I wasn't drinking, I wasn't okay with not drinking. And once I started, I couldn't stop. Then I was probably alcoholic. And I was like, yep, I think I might have this. And but I knew nobody had done the things that I'd done when they were drinking, so I knew that there was no hope for me. And so I decided I was going to drink 3 beers, and I got the number 3. I remember this clear as day. I got the number 3 because you think, like, you hear people say, like, I'm going to have a couple's two, so I picked 3. Never had 3 drinks before, but I thought it seemed like a good number. And, well, not for me, but for my mom, who was sniffing me every time I came home. So I get this, I remember we're talking again, you know, we're always talking, but we're talking a lot now because it's about drinking. So we're talking about the speed at which we're going to drink these 3 beers that we've allotted ourselves so that our mom doesn't find out that we're drinking, and so we're having this conversation, and I remember it clear as day, and I'm like, oh, so I drink the 3 beers and I leave. And I'd never started to drink and stop abruptly. I'd never done that before. I'd, you know, like I said, I drink to alcohol poisoning every time. And what happened is, like, I flipped that night. And I didn't know what it was then, but I know what it is now, and that's the phenomenon of craving. And I'd never experienced it because I'd never stopped long enough to let it happen. And I started, like, punching the steering wheel, and I'm, like, screaming, and I'm like, what is wrong? I've lost it. Like, it's official. And right after I started drinking, they put me on meds because they knew that I was iffy, you know? They knew something was going on, but they couldn't figure out what it was. And I was like, okay, medicine can't fix me. The doctors can't fix me. I'm a goner, you know, pretty much. I was like, I'm hopeless. I can't not drink. And I drank some more. And what happened is, like, the next time I started to drink, I told my family I wasn't going to drink, whatever. I had told everybody. But for the first time, like, to the bottom of my soul, it wasn't that, like, you shouldn't drink because of this, or you should not get in trouble because of this. It was like, I really, really don't want to drink anymore. And I drank. And when I came to that next morning, the grace of God allowed me to come to AA that night. And I picked up my white chip in the Joe and Charlie meeting in Estill Springs, Tennessee. And I got a sponsor that night. I didn't know what she was going to do, like, to me or for me or with me. Or I didn't know what it was going to, but, you know, it went down. And there was only two women where I got sober, so I didn't have to practice with the whole women thing. And I was really out of it. But because what they tell me what happened and what I think happened is very different, which is usually the case. They say that I was pretty whacked, though. But I remember a couple things early on that happened that were so important to me. And I remember we were reading the book, and what I said to her must have been like God allowed me to say that because I did not have that kind of perspective on my own life. But I said, I don't think that I can drink, but I don't think that I can not drink either. And she opened up to a vision for you, and almost the exact words that had just come out of my mouth about my drinking and my life were on the page in front of me. And, like, because I was really paranoid and honestly thought my mom was, like, telling them what to say. Like, oh, I crashed my car, I'm an alcoholic. So I'll say, okay, I crashed my car, I'm an alcoholic too, or whatever. And when I saw it, like, on the book in front of me, something kind of, like, was like, my mom couldn't have made that up, you know? And because I really believed that she was saying that, you know? So we moved on, and I don't remember a lot, but I know that I kind of did a fifth step and moved to Tampa the next day. The one was getting back from Korea. And I had to go, you know, and I did a fifth step, and I wanted to just share this, that I had two fears on that list, spiders in the dark. And if you've done an inventory in sobriety, you probably know that that's not that thorough. But you know what, and I should share this real quick, and I'm running out of time, but I should share this, is I had nightmares, like, real bad my whole entire life, like, real bad nightmares. I would be, like, screaming and, like, oh, it's like grandma shredded by sharks. Like, these really bad, like, traumatic dreams, and my parents would be, like, trying to wake me up. And when I did that the fourth and a half step with her, I didn't have nightmares since, from then, like, till now. Like, I mean, on occasion I will or something, but, like, I had nightmares every single, I never slept through the night. And I just really went a long time. So basically what happened is, like, I moved to Tampa, and I hated AA, and I moved to Tampa with him, and I go to the Red Door one night because they have Joe and Charlie Big Book Study, and I got some Red Door people in here tonight, which is kind of funny. But I love Joe and Charlie, and I hated Tampa AA, so I was like, I'm going to go to Joe and Charlie because they're good. Tampa AA is bad because people were giving me those stupid number sheets that I'm not going to call you, like, you know, Barb and Sally, and I'm not going to call a stranger and tell them I want to die. I'm just not that willing, I guess. And so I went to this meeting, and Tiffany is like, sprints up in my face, you know, and at the time I thought I was going to hit her. I'm like, please don't go to jail, please, you know, because I still don't like women. And she's like, oh my God, hurry, and I was like, oh God, can we just, like, whoa, back it up a little, just, we don't get that close to me, for one. Like, what are you on, that you're thinking you're sober, for two? And a lot of you have had that experience with Tiffany, and it's, you know, and it saved my life, though, you know, like, God put her there, and had I not thought she was on something, I probably would have hit her, you know. I'm like, okay, she's on something, like, you can't hit her. And what happened is she convinced me to come here, which was there at the time, and something crazy happened. Like, I get there, and people, like, Monica was there, Barb was there, like, a lot of the girls that have been sober longer than me were there still, that are here still, came up to me, and they start giving me their phone numbers, and I'm like, I'm not going to call you. Like, I'm thinking in my head, like, you don't know it. Thank you for your number and your time, but I'm not going to call you. But what they did, like, they kind of, like reverse psychology, and I wasn't prepared to, like, defend, you know. They're like, they started asking me for my number. And I'm like, all right, I get not even thinking, you know. Nobody done that before. And then I start getting these stupid text messages. We're going to go to Starbucks. And I'm like, I don't even drink coffee. Why am I going to Starbucks, you know? And they're like, we're going to come to your house and go to Jen and Mike's bridal party. And I'm like, no. And they came to my house. Like, they wouldn't, Morgan and Shannon, they came to my house and wouldn't leave. And, and then I face planted in the car. And, you know, but basically, like, what, it's been kind of crazy, you know, since then. And I've watched this group grow so much. And there's nowhere else I couldn't see myself being on Thursday nights. And, you know, what it's like now is a lot like this. Like, Dave was telling me this story, and I'm going to end with this because it's kind of how I am, you know. But Dave was telling me this story, and I don't recall this, but whenever I was newer, we had went on this camping trip to Cocoa Beach, and I guess he had brought this chair from his house. It's like his chair from his house. He had brought it at the campsite, and we were going to the beach. So I guess apparently, from what he says, I picked up the chair and was going to take it to the beach. Didn't really ask whose it was. I just took it. And we get to the beach, and I had it set up, you know, my chair set up. And I get out of the water, and I'm walking back up through the sand and across all the towels that were laying out, getting sand all over them. And they're like, you're kind of getting sand on the towels. And I'm like, psh, it's the beach, you know, like completely in my own world. And I walk up to Dave sitting in his chair and say, hey, you're sitting in my chair. And he's like, no, this is my chair I brought from my house. And I was like, and like stormed off really offended. And, you know, but that's like been my favorite thing about this is like, and that's why I guess I'm so nervous here or whatever, but the people that have been in this group have like really put up with so much crap for me, and I don't even know how, but that's like the love in AA. You know, so if you're new and you think you're unlovable, like seriously, ask some of the people that love me or at least pretended to love me until I was like slightly lovable, you know? They will, like, people in this group will love anybody. There's no standards, you know? And I don't think I meant to say that. And, you know, but I'm really glad, you know, that not a lot's changed. Okay, so, really then. okay, so I'm really, really glad, you know, to be a part of Christy's life, and she's helped me so much, you know, and I really appreciate everybody in this group that was here before me and that's come here after to help it keep growing, you know, and keep carrying the message. So that's all I have. Thanks.